to make sure we're all on the same page with human trafficking. Before the year 2000, human trafficking was not technically a crime in the United States beyond the 18th Amendment, which eliminated slavery, supposedly, after the Civil War. However, there was still exploitation and debt bondage and peonage going on in the United States, and there weren't any specific federal laws to deal with that. People could be prosecuted under kidnapping and other laws, but it took the TVPA, Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000, to put trafficking, per se, on the books in the United States. So the TVPA criminalized human trafficking and included provisions also to prevent human trafficking, to protect victims and provide them services once we identify them, and to prosecute the exploiters under this act. The Trafficking Victim Protections Act has been reauthorized four times since it was passed under 2000, and we're going to be coming up due for another reauthorization soon, which hopefully Congress will be able to get through. It has become controversial in recent years, even though anti-trafficking efforts generally do enjoy broad bipartisan support. Under the Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000, human trafficking is defined by three different categories: the action taken against the person, the means of exploiting the person, and the purpose ultimately being exploitation. So traffickers use several means of exploiting the person. Oh, sorry. Recruiting, harboring, transporting, providing, or obtaining a person by force, fraud, or coercion. And the means of force, fraud, or coercion are what define human trafficking in the United States. And force, fraud, and coercion involve both physical means of forcing people as well as psychological and social means of exploitation. And in the United States, we divide the exploitation into sexual exploitation versus labor exploitation. That dichotomization does not exist under the UN definition. Sexual trafficking and labor trafficking, as well as organ trafficking, are all included in the UN definition. When a person is under the age of 18 in the United States, it is not necessary to demonstrate force, fraud, or coercion, meaning that any child who is recruited, obtained, transported, harbored for sexual exploitation is considered a victim, even if the person exploiting them does not use force, fraud, or coercion, meaning that anyone we used to consider a child prostitute is actually a victim of human trafficking. We no longer consider children, any minor engaged in any sexual exploitation business, to be a voluntary criminal. Under federal law, under local and state laws, we're still arresting these kids in most jurisdictions. So we have some dichotomization of the way we're treating victims that we need to resolve in the coming years. People who are trafficked in the United States are not just foreign nationals. They are from the United States or from outside the United States. They can come here with legal status. They may not know they have legal status. They may come here under a visa and still be exploited. They can be undocumented. They can be women, men, children, transgendered, any age, old, young. And there's also a variety in race and socioeconomic backgrounds. We do know that people around the world are more likely to be exploited in times of conflict, people who are poor, people who are vulnerable already, but we do see people trafficked in the United States who come from backgrounds of higher education and socioeconomic status. It depends on the circumstances of the individual, even though there are some people who, as a population, are more vulnerable to exploitation based on conflict, war, deep poverty, etc. People are trafficked for a variety of reasons, a variety of labor exploitations. We hear mostly about sex trafficking in the media, but sex trafficking is just one piece of the picture that we see. Commercial sex work can involve prostitution as well as pornography, escort services, and then any other range of industry you can think of can involve labor trafficking. McKinney is going to cover labor trafficking in particular, but it clearly involves a wide range of industries. Traffickers can be anyone from the community. Very often it's somebody that the victim knows. With sex trafficking, we see people who are close to the victim in terms of intimate partners exploiting them, as well as family, friends, and respected community members can often be involved in human trafficking. Business owners, both mom-and-pop operations, as well as large criminal enterprises, are involved in trafficking. You may have heard about some cases involving government employees and diplomats trafficking people. And one thing we know about the international traffickers is they typically have ties in both the United States and the country from which they're bringing people. And Kim is going to get more into international trafficking. Victims of human trafficking experience tremendous variety and amount of abuse. This abuse causes acute and long-term mental and physical health problems. Survivors require both immediate care and long-term comprehensive health care. And that's something that we are all working towards finding access to for these survivors, as well as improving our approach to them. So with that, we're going to pass it on to you. We changed the order. Did you guys talk about that already? Okay. Okay. So we've changed the order to make the program flow better from our perspective. We're going to start with Kim, giving more of a general international and public health overview. Then Kim's going to drill down to domestic minor sex trafficking in Oakland. I'm going to take over with domestic minor sex trafficking in Los Angeles County, pass it over to McKinney for labor trafficking in the United States, and Hadi to wrap it up with some of our efforts in organizing ourselves around this issue. So when I started out in this work, for many years I worked exclusively with foreign national survivors of trafficking, people who had been brought into the United States for sex trafficking or labor trafficking. And this is sort of my side project for 8 years, not really tied to my job in any way, except that I was able to do some clinical work as a volunteer at a community clinic. But in recent years, Los Angeles County, who I work for, has decided to formally take on human trafficking as an issue. The county is focusing only on domestic minor sex trafficking. They're not working on child labor trafficking or adult sex or labor trafficking, but they have decided to tackle this piece of the pie of commercial sexual exploitation of children. And it is a countywide effort, and that's what I'm going to talk to you about today. Do any of you work for local health departments? Hey, my staff, Yang Kui, Dr. Yang Kui. And there are two other hands raised? Great. And the community agencies who partner with health departments? Academics? Where else do you guys work? So this overlaps with your work as well. Anyone else want to volunteer? Thanks for joining us, all of you. So I have no financial relations, which is closed. And the objectives will all be covered in this talk, though not necessarily in the order they're presented in your program. And we covered this in the introduction. Just to reiterate that under international and U.S. law, any minor victim who's exploited for sexual exploitation is not considered a criminal any longer, but a victim of sex trafficking. However, under local laws, we're still arresting prostituted children for crimes. So the Institute of Medicine, as Kim alluded to, did a report, came out in, was it 2012 or 2013 now? Came out in 2013 about the commercial sexual exploitation and sex trafficking of children in the United States. They did an excellent review of many aspects of child sex trafficking. And there's a few highlights on an infographic they put out that will frame this issue for us. One is that is many of us interact with these kids in our daily lives, whether we are in law enforcement, health, social services, legal services, or even in the restaurant business or other, and transportation, there's many sectors of the economy involved in child sex trafficking. Cases have been identified in every state and the District of Columbia, and it's really hard for us to pinpoint the numbers. In my day job, I work with quantitative data. I'm an epidemiologist, and when it comes to getting data, hard data on human trafficking, whether it's for children or adults, for labor or sex, numbers are really hard to come by. So you'll see the range the IOM has put out in this comprehensive report is 1,400 to 2.4 million minors in the United States per year. So what does that mean? We don't really know what the true numbers are. Some other data that we have that I think are reliable are that California is one of the top four states for people to be trafficked into from other countries in the United States. And you want to guess what the other three states are? Sorry? New York? Florida's up there, but not in the last count. Nevada, Texas, New York, and California. California is also considered a magnet for domestic minor sex trafficking. Three cities in California have been identified by the FBI as high-intensity prostituted child areas, and LA is one of these. And just to reiterate that we can identify these patients when we find, or identify these people when we find them, but however, only 1% of victims of the United States are estimated to be found at this point in time. So we definitely, as a community, need to do a better job of finding these victims because we can provide them support and services once we find them. So what are we doing in LA County? First, to give you a little bit of info about Los Angeles County, we are vast. We have almost 10 million people. If we were a state, we would be the ninth most populous state in the country. It's geographically vast, urban areas, rural areas. It can take you all day to get from one end to the other. And we divide the county, because it's so large, into 8 areas for health planning purposes. And of these areas, 90% of the kids who have been identified as commercially sexually exploited children have come from these 2 parts of the county, what we consider the South Service Planning Area and the South Bay Service Planning Area. And these contain some of the cities you may have heard of, like Watts and Compton, in SPA 6, which is the middle, sort of South LA, when you hear about South Central LA. The South Bay has some traditionally African-American communities like Inglewood and Carson, but also contains very affluent areas along the water, such as Rancho Palos Verdes, Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach. SPA 8 is a very diverse area. SPA 6 is considered more of the area of Los Angeles County where we see a lot of negative outcomes for people. So when we talk about the diversity of backgrounds that victims of human trafficking come from, we see that that kind of fits with South SPA, but not with South Bay SPA. And when we look at the data, since this is a healthography conference, I wanted to give you some of the population data we have. The blue bar is LA County overall, the red bar is the South SPA, and the yellow bar is the South Bay SPA. And you can see that the red indicators are worse than the county, except for food insecurity, but they have a higher level of food stamp utilization, so that might be compensating for the food insecurity. But we see a very mixed picture for SPA 8. So the data don't always tell you where to look for these victims. However, there may be more arrests of prostituted children in these areas of LA County than LA County overall. That may be what is reflecting why they're all coming from this area. It may be because of policing, not necessarily because of underlying poverty and social determinants of health. And I was trying to get data out of our probation department, but it's very difficult to get data from them to see what the proportion of arrests are in these areas compared to LA County overall for juveniles. That is some data that we're going to hope to obtain so we can do a better analysis of why are we finding all the kids in this area. We believe kids are exploited all over the county, kids of all different races and backgrounds, but we're only finding primarily 90% from this area, 90% African-American girls. So the boundaries also cross over into our political boundaries, which are totally separate. And this is how this issue became political in LA County. The area we're talking about where the kids are being arrested is like this. So it crosses what we consider 3 supervisorial districts. Each supervisor in LA County is responsible for governing about 2 million people. And 2 of those supervisors have gotten very involved in this issue, and this has brought it to the forefront of what's happening. So even though this has been happening forever in Los Angeles County with children being exploited, now that a couple of the supervisors have identified this as a problem in their district, they're trying to do something about it. And it's great. It's also the political process sort of twists things around. So this was one of the kickoff events of LA County tackling commercial sexual exploitation of children. Last fall, one of our supervisors held a big rally on an evening, and they gathered people from, there are 88 cities in Los Angeles County. So Los Angeles City is just one. There's 87 other cities. They brought together all the cities from that high-risk area of the county, put them up on a podium, and had everybody talk about child sex trafficking. And some of them didn't know anything about it, except that it was now a hot political issue. And they were up there saying things like, we're going to arrest all the prostitutes, when that was exactly the opposite of what we were trying to say, that these are children, they're victims, and arrest is not the solution. So putting the politics before the understanding doesn't always work well as a solution, but at least people started thinking about the issue. And actually, in LA County, this woman started thinking about the issue a long time ago. She worked in our Department of Child and Family Services and as an attorney, and she eventually became the commissioner of what's called the Star Court, which is a special court similar to one that we have in Oakland called the Girls Court that takes care specifically of girls. They haven't gotten to boys yet. Boys are also commercially sexually exploited. Girls who have been arrested on prostitution-related charges who are now identified as victims. So the court's called Succeeding Through Achievement and Resilience, and aside from locking these kids in detention camps and juvenile hall, they're trying to work with them to make their lives better. And they're working now in an interdisciplinary manner with Department of Children and Family Services and now with others of us in the county to improve the outcome for these kids. They've had 222 youth participate in the program, 113 have finished, and 109 are still in the program. I actually had the privilege of going on a retreat with 37 of these girls last weekend, and it was incredible. Incredible activities to bring the trauma out of these kids, and incredible to see the resilience and also to see hear about the pain these kids have gone through. So one interesting thing is that over 40% of the girls have been arrested on charges other than prostitution. So the kids who are being picked up for charges like armed robbery or potential assault charges, and then they're finding that these kids are victims of abuse as well. So it's a mixed bag of kids, and some of them have harder crimes than others in their background that need to be addressed moving forward. One of the major things to consider, and we see this in other cities as well, Oakland and New York have published data on this, 80% of the kids in the system had involvement with child and family services prior to their arrest, meaning that these kids who are victims of severe sexual exploitation were already in our child welfare, child protective services program before they were ever arrested. So there was an opportunity to identify them as high-risk kids, to assess their home environment and protect them, and we failed as a society to do that. The Star Court is trying to address this, and one of the things they've done is reduce the time the kids are spending in detention from 35 days to 25 days. That's still 25 days. These girls are getting locked up in jail and treated as criminals for something that was inflicted upon them. So we have a lot of work to do, but we're making strides there. 73% of them have not been arrested since starting the program. Unfortunately, the court and probation were not able to provide any data on what is that number for kids who aren't in the program. So what is the meaning of it? I can't tell you. One marker that they count is very important is that 25% of the girls whose cases are closed, who have finished the Star Court program, are still in touch with somebody from their Star Court team voluntarily. So whether it's an advocate they've met or a social worker or a probation officer, they are still forming these ties with adults who support them. And that was one of the most remarkable things I saw at this empowerment conference was kids bonding with adults who may be the first adult in their life who's ever said to them, you know, you have a lot going for you, you are strong, you are smart, you are beautiful, you can survive this. These kids have come from homes where they've never heard even I love you, some of them. So these relationships with adults are key to these girls responding. So we have a multi-agency task force in Los Angeles County that brings together health services, including our Department of Mental Health, health services, which is the patient care and public health that I'm a part of, along with advocates, law enforcement agencies, the court system, probation system, and we are all working together on addressing this issue in the county. The first thing that they've started with is a first responder protocol. So when we think of first responders, those of us in healthcare and medical care, we think of emergency medical services, emergency medicine physicians, as first responders. The county views first responders as law enforcement. Okay, so we're going along with that. And again, this is a very political process. These are two of our supervisors and the head of probation. And they're working to make a system so that when a police officer arrests a child, still arresting them because they find them on the street or in a motel room, any situation that could be considered prostitution of children, the police officer can now contact an advocate and the probation department and child and family services, and they will take that kid and find a better placement for them than keeping them in the jail all night, and it will also allow the police officer to leave and go on to their business, whereas officers used to have to spend 6 or 8 hours when they had a child victim. They would get tied up in the station. So actually driving by these kids on the street because they didn't want their night to be spent doing paperwork on a child. Now they can pick up the girls and bring them to safety and not have to be bogged down in social work, which is what was happening to the police before implementation of this protocol. So what is public health doing? We contribute to this task force. As I mentioned, it is primarily now a law enforcement first responder protocol, not a public health or health services protocol. But we are working on developing countywide social service and health services resources for the program and creating the curriculum for the foster parents who work with these girls. And our public health nurses who work with child and family services are involved in this curriculum development. We've also brought together, one more slide before that. So this is a list from the Institute of Medicine on risk factors for commercial sexual exploitation of children. Again, this is an amazing report. I suggest reading it if you're interested in this issue. And we thought, well, what are we doing in public health that overlaps with these major risk factors? We do work with runaway, throwaway, and homeless youth. We work with kids who are subjected to substance abuse and substance abuse, whether it's their parents' issues or their own issues. We work with system-involved kids, either from child protective services or law enforcement. And we work with disabled kids through our child medical services. So public health touches on this in many, many aspects of risk for kids. So we want to train our people to identify commercially sexually exploited children and refer them properly. So we brought together staff from multiple agencies in our department. Again, LA County is really big, so we have many, many divisions, more than most local health departments do. But we've identified a lot of programs in our department that potentially interact with these youth, and we're bringing everybody together in meetings. And there's a lot of interest in this now, which is wonderful after years of it being sort of in the shadows. So we're developing identification response referral protocols for our high-risk youth, for our programs that work with high-risk youth. We're exploring screening questions that public health programs can use to better identify these kids. Again, as Kim pointed out, some children will identify in clinical settings if they are asked directly about their problem. Many other kids will not, and that's a whole other talk, but we are trying to figure out what the best questions are, looking at questions that have been validated now in legal settings and trying to apply them for public health settings. We're building public health connections with other agencies in the community that work with these kids. We are traditionally very siloed within public health, separate from even mental health and health services, let alone child protective services and law enforcement. We're also very siloed within public health. We have our HIV, we have our TB, we have our other services, and now we're trying to get everybody talking to each other about this issue. And we're trying to standardize data collection. Also the legal issues, because people are worried about what, if you suspect somebody is an exploited child, but they don't disclose to you, what is our legal responsibility in protecting and referring this child? So we're working through a lot of issues. One encouraging thing is that this big kickoff for law enforcement, the head of our probation department stated that probation has no business in this business. So while they're taking the lead on identifying and protecting these girls right now, they admit that this should not be a law enforcement issue where we're locking up children. So we have the jail leadership on this. The children in LA County who are arrested go into the probation department, not in the general criminal justice system. So we are working as public health to help probation and the rest of the county change the policy so that these kids will actually be treated as kids who've been victimized their whole lives in most cases, and not as criminals the way they're being treated now. We are bringing the approach for the public health approach to violence, which is multidisciplinary and collaborative. That's already being done actually by the other, that was at the table. They brought us to the table because it's multidisciplinary. But they're not treating health as a broad perspective issue the way we do, where health is physical, emotional, social well-being. They are treating health as what do you do if a kid has an injury when you find them. And we all know it's a lot more broad than that. Trauma-informed service delivery, that does not exist in our LA County public system. As you can imagine, a large county health system, very impersonal, very sometimes traumatic for any patient, let alone a patient who's already been traumatized. We're trying to broaden the understanding of CSEC from just girls to boys, and from not just heterosexual girls, but to LGBTQ boys and girls who are at very high risk for human trafficking. And we're also trying to bring more of prevention efforts to the process. Tertiary prevention is what's happening now, where they're taking kids who are already deeply involved in commercial exploitation and trying to rehabilitate them. We're trying to find the kids at highest risk who are involved in the child welfare system already, find them before things get bad and help them, and to prevent this from happening in the first place through education in the schools and pediatricians' offices, etc. And even deeper than that, to get to eliminating the poverty, lack of education, unemployment, and other risk factors for trafficking that exist in these girls' communities. Thank you very much. Oh, one other positive note. So, it is a very devastating condition that these girls go through, but we do see survivors get through this and thrive and bloom and become amazing, sophisticated, smart, successful adult women. The women on the edges are all out, survivors of human trafficking. They were all at this conference I attended last week, working with the girls, inspiring the girls. And it is just the most beautiful thing to see people come through this kind of violence and abuse and build great lives and turn around and help other people, which is what a lot of these survivors do when they're able. When they're recovered, they turn around and help others. So it's just an amazing community to work with. Thank you very much for your time, and feel free to contact me and talk about any of this if you're interested.